This is the 1UP Radio Network, and now GFW Radio.
Hello and welcome to the GFW Radio Podcast. This is the podcast for March 15th, 2007.
Ryan, I thought you were going to be a lot more animated. You were going to be like, hey, or something.
No.
No, you're not able. No,
this is all you get. So as you can tell, our regular host, Jeff Green, is not here today. He is out with yet another debilitating illness, which I think is the third or fourth.
Well, okay, so there was, see, there was the pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
Then he had, well, there was the car problem. He was like trapped in, does that count as one of the problems? He was out of the office for a couple
yeah.
days.
Buried in ice for two buried weeks in, or whatever. Yeah,
it, yeah, I mean, that was ridiculous. Then he had the infamous pass out incident.
Yeah, and now this. And now can't this, catch a break.
Seriously, no. Man, I thought bad news happens in threes.
Fours.
Well, four is now, I guess.
I don't know. Maybe there's two more coming because we just hit the second.
Don't even say it, man. Don't even say it.
So, yeah. We also have no Sean Elliott today. Yeah, he's also under the weather.
That's what our Michael Winslow of GFW. No sound effects
I'll
today.
I'll try filling in. Okay, whoa, whoa.
So now you just got to deal with us.
I'll do a nerd voice.
Well, you know, we could all do nerd voices, although my
I'm doing one right now.
Yeah, I'm doing one.
Mm. Maybe it was that movie we saw yesterday.
Yes. I feel too manly after seeing 300.
Yeah, we all saw 300 as a group after our big old deadline, which is why we're late, by the way, because of our stupid magazine. See, if we didn't have a magazine, we would have a podcast every week right on time. But no.
But no, you need to actually write stuff, which is kind of messed up.
So
we should just, like, jump right into it, or do we need to identify ourselves? Or?
Oh, yeah, we should have some sort of ID. Without Jeff here, this is like, what do we do?
Oh, my God. So I'm Darren Gladstone.
I'm Sean Malloy.
And as previously mentioned,
Scott. Oh, man. Yeah. This is a really polished podcast.
So what are we talking about?
Well, we had a whole list of things. I mean, I guess
since we were just mentioned the fact that we had saw 300, I'm not going to talk about the movie so much as the reviews that have been going up. And if you look at Rotten Tomatoes and, you know, we're talking movie critics here. Have all been kind of comparing it to a video game in a negative light. Anytime there's a lot of reviews that say, you know, oh, this isn't very good. It's just like watching a video game. It's something we've heard a lot in, you know, other movies, for other movies, not just 300. But finally, someone at Variety, a big, pretty big movie trade publication, decided to write an editorial that just said, stop it. So I'm going to read a small segment of it. Okay, this is by Ben Fritz at Variety.
Sorry, what's his name again?
Ben Fritz,
right, okay.
So reviews for 300 were across the board, but those who disliked it shared a derision that reveals at least as much about today's film critics as it does their thoughts on the movie. And, quote, once the newness of 300's look wears off, which inevitably does, all we're left with is a video game come to life, wrote Kenneth Turan in the Los Angeles Times. 300 will be talked about as a technical achievement, next blip on the increasingly blurry line between movies and video games, added Slate to Dana Stevens. And then later he's like, those are all negative reviews, of course. For today's movie critics, video games are the new MTV music video, a shorthand insult for any movie deemed too heavy on effects and visual panache at the expense of plot and coherence. And then he pretty much goes on to say, all right, you guys got to stop doing this because you're clearly revealing yourselves to be just have no, your finger is not on the pulse of media in general if you think all video games are like this. And he's got a point.
Yeah. You know what? I'm gonna throw it out there. And good going, man. That you totally hit the nail on the head because, I mean, there are so many games that have, like, better storylines than some movies I've seen. I mean, why don't you just compare it to a crappy, you know, how many video games do you see get compared to crappy summer blockbusters?
Yeah. Well, he says later in the article, stereotyping games as based on brainless violent subset is as fair as dismissing the art of movie making based on Wild Hogs. Which made a whole lot of money that first week it was out, by the way.
Are you kidding me?
Made like almost $40 million.
Oh, dear God.
So, yeah.
I weep for this nation.
So has anybody actually compared it to a comic book?
I know. That's the weird thing is like how many people are comparing it to the comic book it was based on.
which identical.
Yeah, it's a strange thing where movie, the word video game is definitely tossed around as shorthand for it kind of sucks and has no soul. And I don't know. Maybe I've been guilty of this, too. Maybe I've, like, said, yeah, that was kind of like watching a video game. But I don't know.
But the thing is, it's like, I mean, yeah, in some weird way, maybe it's a little like Dynasty Warriors or something. But, I mean.
Dude, that.
I know.
That's a bad comparison.
That's a bad comparison.
That makes me not
Want to see the movie?
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of, it's kind of like just hack and slash.
It's about the worst video game it could be.
There you go. But I guess what I'm getting at is, what I'm getting at is, I mean, like, why don't they try comparing 300 to Knights of the Old Republic, Jade Empire?
Well, I think that's the point, is the people who are saying video game have no idea.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it.
That games like that even exist.
I want to sit those critics in front of those games.
That's not going to happen. I mean,
I know it's not going to happen, but it's just kind of like.
That's just saying these people are just using a shorthand they shouldn't, because they're completely clueless. And totally. It just makes the reviewers look like they're totally out of touch.
Yep.
And makes them feel less credible. I mean, it's more on them than on us.
I know. It just gets frustrating because they're at like the LA Times or something. A different subset of people listen to them as opposed to people who would pick up a magazine or listen to a podcast, because. You know, my father, he's not going to – he picks up the magazine because I'm in it, but he's probably going to pick up the local paper.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
So, yeah. Video game, more to video games than just the stabbing things with spears games, as we all know. What the fuck? Someone is holding up a piece of paper that says
– Wait, do we have something?
Okay, hey, everyone, it's Sean Elliott.
Sean Elliott, he's feeling okay. He's alive.
Miracle. Hold on, he's going to put it.
He's actually going to throw up on the mic.
Sorry about that weird interference here. Who's got a headset for him?
Hey, you can borrow mine. We only got three.
Okay. All right, so this is one. Is this the...
All right, okay.
Heroes.
Trusty, so stepping out, but I just found this one. I had to bring it by.
Heroes of the Web.
PS2 Forcer 31. God, I'm not even ready for this. Okay. It's coming in here on a dry run. Okay. What the hell? Why the in the hell did we not get our Tonelico Melody of Olemia in Canada? Just like them, to leave us in the dark. Then they wonder why their company is going down the shitter. All as I got to say, level 5/Square Enix, they need to hand their company over to the RPG Pro SP Apple. That they have been doing RPGs for the last 20-something years for the love of Christ. Only RPG gods, lol. To which... This generated the response.
Well, actually, you know, before the one thing I know
there's
you're sick,
more,
so.
Dude. This is going.
Okay, I'll wait.
It's the same dude. He's coming back. So someone like interrupts him to say Helen Keller age 5. Then he comes back. Well, I'm sorry that it bothers you so fucking much. If it bothers you so much, that why in the hell did you read my post and reply? God, I'm really starting to hate ignorant Americans, or sorry, Americans. They are always so mean to Pineapple. No wonder why they the most hated Pineapple in the world. You know what? I am sorry that I can't spell and that I am so slow. No. Why the hell am I even boating with look where the comments are coming from? Shit on the bottom of my feet. But man, who are you to me? Nothing. That's what. Nothing. Sorry to hear about them towers of yours, you sick and fucking tired of people calling me name. Okay, I am going to stop now before I say something that I am going to regret saying. So I think he already said a bunch that he's going to regret say. And on that note,
we out.
Peace out.
Thank you.
Good.
That was the real deal. You know what? Actually, the one thing I know you're not feeling well, but I was kind of wishing you'd do it with a Canadian nerd accent.
I can't do Canadian. Bye, Sean. Right.
Feel better, man.
All right. So, yeah, he's clearly very sick.
So sick. But you know what? But that thing is, that lit a fire under his ass this morning. Like, I remember he showed me that, like, originally, and I'm like, dude, you got to read that on air. I'm glad he came around. He's probably out the door as we speak, but...
Feel better, Sean.
Feel better, but
we need more Heroes of the Web. What were we talking about?
We were just wrapping up the 300 talk. So,
movie critics dumb, video games cool.
Yay!
Woo!
Way to sum up the topic. Okay.
Yeah.
So we had a couple other things we wanted to cover. Do you want to hit the? You run the show this time.
I'm running the show. Oh yeah, we should pick someone to run the show, huh? We could talk a bit about things we saw at GDC. If you all know, the Game Developers Conference was last week. We talked a little bit about it right before we went. And to me, it seems like almost like a month ago, but I don't know if that's just
it was
because
last
I'm
week.
Like, I know. I don't know if it's just like the deadline really got to me?
Or? Weren't there a couple moans and groans on the web, on the boards about how, like, oh, they're just going to complain about how boring it was?
Well, someone said, how much do you want to bet that after complaining about how boring GDC is before they go, that they'll come back and devote the whole podcast to it? But I don't think we will.
No,
let's
we
find
won't.
Out, though.
But actually, there was one boring part of the podcast, one boring part of the show. I just got to share this quick story. So it was Garnett and myself. We were all psyched to go check out. There was this one panel on Alan Wake talking about its development and how it's being put together. Mm-hmm. And we both walked in. We're like, kind of cool. Because there was something about Crysis happening at the same time. So we had to, basically, it was like, you know, the Sophie's Choice. Do I learn more about Crysis or Alan Wake? Mm-hmm. So we sit on the Alan Wake thing, and we're kind of like waiting for it to like kick in. And the whole thing was talking about not like what's going into the – I mean, it's partially what's going into the process, but it was very much like – it was like project management, like how they broke up the project management of putting together Alan Wake and how they work with a small company, you know, a very small team of people.
Garnett had compared it when he was explaining it to me. And he was equally like, why did we go to this?
Yeah, no. It was like basically
he's pretty much said this is like – the first business course you'd have at a community college kind of thing.
Yeah, that's basically what it was. When it got to the point they threw up a Gantt chart on screen, I'm like, okay, yeah. I think I'm about ready to leave.
Well, wasn't it? It was just like, hey, why don't you consider outsourcing?
Wow, kind of like something you might see at a game developer.
Yeah,
conference.
Exactly. Now, that brings up the point, like, a lot of these panels,
no, actually,
not for us.
Well, there were a couple panels that were for us, but, like, I did the Russian roulette and sat on the one that really wasn't for us.
Right.
But on that note, I think you sat on a pretty cool one, right?
The only good one and I didn't see many just because, you know, I didn't go to a whole lot of it because I don't feel a lot of the stuff is right up my alley, but the only one that I thought was interesting was called PC Games in the Age of Connected Consoles. I think that's what it was called.
And rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, it really does. It was basically it was kind of a doomy, gloomy little kind of tone to it, but it was, you know, we always hear PC gaming death knell sound.
Well, who was on the panel? Like, what were they?
You had Richard Hilleman from EA. He's a producer. He's done, like you said, over 100 titles for them. EA's Mike Capps, president over there. Epix, yep. Sorry. Soren Johnson from Firaxis.
Yep.
And someone from Obsidian whose name I have forgotten.
Fergus?
No, it wasn't Fergus. Should have printed it
Chris?
Out. Chris? Maybe it was Chris.
Okay, in that case.
Anyway, the point of the panel was to discuss, you know, get people up there saying, okay, we've got Xbox Live, we've got, you know, PS3 is now, you know, theoretically as online as consoles can get.
Mm-hmm.
Theoretically. And what place does the PC have in this universe now? Because, you know, PC's biggest strength has long been, you know, online. So the panel pretty much decided or concluded, everyone was on the same page about, like, really the future of PC gaming isn't going to be your Crysises. It's not going to be your Gears of War kind of games. Those are, Mike Capps pretty much said, like, we don't make a cent on the PC versions of these anymore. We make all our money on consoles. It's the entry barrier is too high for users, like, you know, the high-end video cards they need for these things. Mm-hmm. And most of the people doing it are pirating it anyway. So it's pretty much like they're saying consoles are just it. Sorry. So that was one of the scary little things.
All right. So let me just.
And I know this piracy thing has been like every computer platform in the universe has been. Like, piracy was blamed for the death of every one of them. But
it's not like it's any better for consoles.
Well, it is a little better.
I mean, it's a little more difficult, but it, not.
That's
not
exactly
you,
it. I mean,
not if you're really.
It's really easy to pirate PC games comparatively. I mean, it is.
I mean, it's not built into every PC that you can't hack or you can't, like, pirate.
Right. I mean, the strength of PC being that you can get online and get pretty much anywhere in the universe really fast makes it so that, you know, you can get. It's illegal material really fast, too. So that's, you know, a strength and a weakness. But that was something they were discussing. I'm just kind of parroting what the panel is saying right now.
Let me fix my resume.
So they were saying, like, the games that are going to be successful on PCs are the persistent world ones where the piracy is impossible. So you got your World of Warcraft, your MMOs, even like a Battlefield 2142. Mm-hmm. I guess EA considers that an MMO because of the persistent stuff.
And you know what? If you ask me, I think a big part of it is, I mean, you're right. Like, the barrier to entry for playing those high-end, the Crisis, and you know, every game, it's you need to have a couple $1,000s at your disposal. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, obviously for significantly less, you can get a decent experience on a console. It's going to be, I wouldn't say comparable, but, you know, it'll be there. And what's stopping people from, like, just, you know, hopefully Game Studio Express and basically seeing more indie games and more, like, smaller efforts that you couldn't see come out on a console.
Right. That was one of the things. That was another one of the areas that these panelists were kind of like, here's one of the areas that's going to be popular and one of the niches that PCs is going to evolve into. It's more about evolution of the PC into persistency, little indie games, and casual games.
The funny thing is, that's exactly where PC gaming started.
Right.
You know, back in the day, it started
with full circle.
Oh,
the lights went out.
Now the mood lighting in the room. Anyway, but the point is, like, we've always been like this. I mean, like, it's only with the advent of 3D cards and, you know, I guess FMV games, like, the games started getting bigger and beefier and, like, mm-hmm. doing a lot more and demanding a lot more hardware.
Right. And now they're saying...
Maybe...
Now that consoles are doing a lot of what PCs could only do, that it's going to swing back towards consoles for certain types of games. So
right, and I'm going to be totally honest with you. Like, this is like for a long time now, ever since, you know, the Freeloader surfaced in the magazine and we started, you know, running these 101 free games features annually. I've been a lot more fascinated by, like, the indie gaming efforts. I mean, I regularly hit the game dev boards and I'm looking for like talented students and guys who just want to, like, make a game out of their basement, because that's where the really creative stuff's coming out of. Mm-hmm. And actually, I could totally derail this conversation into a whole other territory, but I'll hold out for a second. Did you want to keep going with PC doom and gloom? Or?
More PC doom and gloom. No, I'm just saying what the panel said. I mean, they were very clearly, like, very skeptical about the PC's future. And this is, like, you know, pretty big developers talking here.
But, you know, so. And that's exactly it. These are big developers who are skeptical about the future because they want to make these big, huge, mega title games that cost millions of dollars.
And again, yeah, again, maybe I'm, you know, misstating when I say skeptical about the future. They're skeptical about the future as it existing as it does today. Because they are saying persistent worlds. The guy from EA was all over, well, obviously he's all over The Sims, but he was kind of saying the big reason The Sims is so popular is because you have this unfettered access, or the people playing The Sims have this unfettered access to all of these community things they can do. And there's no, like, Microsoft or Sony barriers to it. Mm-hmm. So if you want to get, like, you know, your Sims porn mods or whatever, it's totally there. And that's right. Something that Xbox Live, for example, you're never going to get stuff that isn't sanctioned to be on Xbox Live Arcade. So that's right. Kind of, you know, the open network thing mm-hmm. is huge. And they were skeptical about, like, how open network the PS3 could ultimately be. But
yeah, there's got to be some policing at some level for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
And EA, you know, EA has an interesting place right now too. Because I mean, they were some early pioneers in online gaming, and you know they've had some mixed results over the years, right?
Oh yeah.
I mean, I personally wonder what would happen if Majestic came out today.
Someone reviewed something that was pretty much like Majestic.
Well, Mole Missing.
Yeah.
I mean,
how was that?
Well, the first game was great. Uh-huh. I mean, we gave it Adventure Game of the Year, the first one.
Oh, okay, cool. I didn't know that.
The sequel was kind of a mess, but okay. That's a whole other story. But I'm just saying, it's like they were trying they've tried all these different things. Motor City Online, obviously, UO.
Right.
And now that they've acquired
Earth and Beyond.
Oh, Earth and Beyond. Jeez. EverQuest in space. But
I liked that game. All right.
Did you?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of fun.
But anyway, but now they acquired, like, Mythic Games. There's some cool, you know, there is some possibilities. Like, they definitely are, at least it looks like they want to invest further in, like, the future of online gaming.
Mm-hmm.
So they're sticking with PCs in that respect. Have you seen Warhammer?
I saw it at E3. I haven't seen it since then. You mean more?
The MMO game.
Yeah. I think
it looks pretty cool.
I mean, that game suffers from the, like...
That's an unfortunate problem, too.
Which came first, Warcraft or Warhammer? Because I looked at it and I was like, okay, this is going to be competing directly against Warcraft. World of Warcraft. There's no...
Well, yeah.
But, like, and if you look back, like, Warcraft kind of ripped them off and looked...
Oh, totally, yeah.
In their style. I mean, you could argue that. I'm not saying they did.
Oh, no. Well, no, actually, it's pretty much... Like, if you just look down a timeline...
Yeah, but then you could also argue that, like... fantasy itself was ripped off from Tolkien, which was ripped off from something else. So who knows who ripped off who?
More begats than the Bible.
The point is, they're throwing this out there when World of Warcraft is going to be still huge, and it's going to be dangerous for them. But they do have different kind of cool PvP stuff.
But you know, I think that anybody who's played like any of the Warhammer, the 40K games, or the THQ RTSs, that people will actually understand that universe and that style. Because
now, it's interesting you say 40K because there's another MMO they announced at the GDC.
That's right.
Based on 40K, which I would be way more interested in than non-40K.
Totally would.
I mean, I don't know how long away that is. That's got to be years.
Well,
years,
I say whichever one comes first, Warhammer 40K Online or World of Starcraft. Either whichever one comes out first, I'm investing in.
Because I need a good sci-fi MMO.
Seriously, that's what I'm waiting for.
Well, there's this this one that CCP does called EVE Online.
I don't know. Cool.
It's all spaceships though, right? See, I want non-spaceships too.
Okay, you want a sci-fi MMO without spaceships?
Well, yeah, like that's possible.
What Star Wars could have been? Like Tabula Rasa looks like it could be the sci-fi MMO that maybe I would play.
Well, that's
I have both. Okay. I don't just want to fly a ship.
Did you guys actually get to see that during the show?
Yeah.
What did you think of it?
It looked cool. Like they were kind of talking up all these points that they thought were big deals, but it's like, well, we've kind of seen this before. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was, you know, Richard Garriott. He was presenting the game. And he was talking about this, like, instance content. Like, nobody had ever seen instance content before and how, like, this was their original idea or something.
You know, it's kind of funny. Like, so many people are like, it's total spin doctor mode. Like, I dealt with that a couple times during last week, too. I mean, hell, I was talking to, I could so go in, like, five different directions with this conversation. But,
pick one.
Okay, I'm going to pick one. I'm going to go with Live Anywhere.
Okay.
I mean, live for on Vista on PC now. That opens up a whole
Windows
other can
Live
of,
or whatever.
Yeah, right. That's a whole other can of worms. That I don't know, man. Like a lot of people are hating on that, and I'm kind of halfway there on it as well. So the idea is like if you already are, I mean, basically if you already are a Live member, if you pay for Xbox Live service, $50 a year, then it extends to the PC, and you have all the same stuff you expect from the console experience on a PC as well, plus interconnected, you know, console PC gameplay. Mm-hmm. Wahoo! For those who haven't done who are strictly PC and haven't signed up for Live, it's a really hard sell. So basically, there's the silver and gold package. The silver package is what everyone gets, no matter what.
That's free.
That's totally free.
That's free on Xbox Live.
You're right. So basically, you can text chat, meet up with buddies, synchronize combat, you know, synchronize, you know, actions, whatever.
Right.
You can, I believe, from what I've been told, set up servers so you can host servers and play against other people. And you can get achievement points that in single player modes of games, but it won't carry over into multiplayer.
Okay.
Yeah, but what games?
But here's any game that's going to come out with that's going to support the Games for Windows thing is going to have this built into it, basically. And you know, coming down the road, Halo is the first one. Beyond that is, you know, Shadowrun and stuff like that. The part that I thought was pretty stupid is you have to basically, like, the one thing that you kind of expect the most out of it, voice, that's part of the gold package.
Okay.
So basically you could text people, but you can't talk to them. And then if you want to talk to them and you don't want to pay, then it's like, okay, I'm going back to using Ventrilo or TeamSpeak or any other billions of programs I already use.
Right.
So is it really making life easier or is it just further complicating matters?
Well, I think the argument is that
they're trying to apply console logic to the PC,
but you know what? I think part of the problem is like what sold it in the first place for consoles is you had all these extra things, plus you could download extra content, and you know all these.
But these are all things that made sense for the console.
That's right, and these are all things that you can already do on a PC. So they're trying to
So they're adding another layer to it.
Right. That's exactly
which
it.
People are obviously resistant to.
And the one, and I guess tying this in with what Gary had said about how instancing for the first time. I was talking to them. Just yesterday or something, and one guy who shall remain nameless, don't want to, because we were just talking shit. He says, "Yeah, and finally, you know, in a game like Shadowrun, console gamers and PC gamers can finally determine who's best." You know, I'm like, couldn't they do that on the Dreamcast with Quake? Because that had cross-platform playing. Couldn't they do that with let me see, one of the Need for Speed games lets you have PC versus console racing. Mm-hmm. So there's all these different just conveniently forgetting things, but
the past.
I got an email from some random press release the other day that was like, whatever game they were talking about, it was like, this is the first online World War II shooter ever. What?
Man, okay. You know what?
I don't even know what to say to that.
And it's like, even if they meant first, you know, MMO, World War II shooter ever, like,
that'd still be wrong.
Not right either, yeah.
Man, you know what? We should just have, like,
that's
the hype.
Presumptuous of them.
Okay, you know what? I say, like, for next week, we should just, like, be like the hyperbole police and just, like, grab some, like, the best press release we can find and just read it on air.
Oh, man.
Have another segment. Add to the Heroes of the Web. The Heroes of PR.
I have
Heroes of PR.
Good emails. Anytime we get an awesome email like that, I'll print it up and, like, tape it up outside my cube. We have
a lot of them. You should just start reading those. You could do a whole podcast based on Brian's wall.
We could.
Yeah, we've had a couple over here. So, yeah, there's, like, a lot of quality hate mail up on that guy.
So, yeah, I guess the big question for this is, like, what are we getting out of it?
Right.
Like, that we don't already have that isn't just a complicated.
Well, actually, the other thing that the gold package offers, as far as I understand right now, is, like, the matchmaking stuff, like, True Skill. I think that's their TM for the matchmaking service. So, basically, cutting down on the clutter. And they'll have the servers on the back end and, you know, whatever.
So, no, to play Shadowrun against an Xbox 360 player, you need gold, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
The cross-platform play only happens on gold.
So you have Halo 2 and Shadowrun. That's pretty much
I think
the lineup right now as we know it.
That's pretty much it.
Okay.
You know what, though? Like, I mean, PC gamers who are competitive and play these games online, right? Mm-hmm. They're just going to be like, well, the hell with this. These console gamers aren't as skilled. I mean, I'm assuming that would be
there's
a whole
there's the coming grudge matches and see who really, you know, if I mean, there's a couple layers of this. I mean, like,
there are
one. I mean, they have to be able to balance the game well, so that, I mean, because oftentimes on console games, they, you know, and especially in first person shooters, they tweak the accuracy so that, like, it's like the targets are a little stickier and it's easier to hit something than it is with a keyboard and mouse.
And say there are a bunch of PC players playing, would you even want to play against these console players?
That's actually another valid point. Like, are they cool to hang? Are they mature? Are they just a bunch of, like,
or, I mean, you even know that, like, okay, so they're playing a different style of game, like, because they're using a controller. Mm-hmm. Like, do I really want to match my skills against them, because I know that not really an even playing field.
Man, it's tough to say if that's the problem. I mean, I think the better test would be
I think it's one of the many issues here.
The first true test would be with Shadowrun. It's a very frenetic kind of, it's more like from what I played of it, it feels somewhere between Counter-Strike and UT style, kind of fast-paced.
Now,
so,
can you play PC versus PC Shadowrun without gold?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so would you necessarily, if there's enough players, assuming there's enough players who have this game, why would you want to play against the console people? What's different about that? For a player.
That's the million-dollar question, and mm-hmm. I won't know until you know, I actually get some code in my hands.
Right.
So what else does gold give you? Do you know?
Details? A firm handshake. I don't know. There's not much more. I mean, like, as far as I know right now, like, that's kind of the high level, what to expect sort of thing. And
all the details are out there.
Not all the details are out there. And really, like, they just see this as a first step. And, man, they need to get that second and third step pretty quick, if you ask me.
Well, it sounds like as a first step, what we know or what we think we know is not really all that interesting or appealing.
Well, I mean, it's like I said, it's basically adding a whole other layer and still not offering everything that an X-Fire can give you right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, like, going, you know, setting up matches in a game is great, but not being able to actually talk to somebody, you know, having to switch over to another program just to, you know, talk to them during the game. Kind of stupid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a tougher. I mean, basically, like, if I was Joe Microsoft, I was over there working on this project, the one hurdle that I would try to, like, overcome is providing that extra content. You know, make the voice free and, like, figure out what other extras can you give somebody to incentivize them to pay that money a month.
Right.
As it stands,
well, it's a yearly thing, right?
Right. The only thing that this makes sense for right now is someone who has an Xbox 360, mm-hmm. has the gold service, and also happens to play PC games. That's
right.
The only way this makes sense to me right now. I'm taking a wait and see approach. There needs to be more coming out of it at this point.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. Ryan, do you have anything to add?
No.
Awesome.
All right, let's take a little break here, and then we'll come back and we'll have even more stuff to talk about.
Strangely, I thought this would be a really quick podcast, and
yeah, it's. Yeah, I figured with the three of us, we'd have just nothing to say. because we're all really boring.
Thanks.
I'm sure the listeners have listened.
You guys.
Yeah, let's see.
I'm sure the listeners have determined that already. But
this whole damn podcast.
Let's see if they hang on till the end of the podcast.
Okay. See you in a bit.
Oh, hello. I didn't see you there. But as long as you're here, let me tell you about EGM Live, the weekly podcast from the editors of Electronic Gaming Monthly, along with the wonderful sounds of... EGM Live comes action-packed with special guests, late-breaking news, fanboy-baiting commentary, behind-the-scenes tales of office tomfoolery, and trivia contests with fantabulous prizes. Download it now at egmlive.oneup.com or subscribe to it through iTunes.
EGM Live is part of the 1UP Radio Network, taped in the Ziff Davis offices in San Francisco. It is not actually live, and contest prizes are not guaranteed to be fantabulous.
And we're back.
Hi. I was wondering who was going to do that, because we didn't decide before the break.
Well, I had to take advantage of that. Actually, I'm going to jump on the mic really quick and kind of rip through a couple quick things from I spent my whole week at GDC, and I don't want to waste the whole show talking about it, but there are some interesting things I just want to throw out there. So, before the break, we're talking a little bit about Halo 2 Vista.
We were.
Funny how that happened. So I just wanted to bring this up really quick. Now, you've played it on the consoles, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hell no.
Ah, shut up. All right. So, I mean,
I've played it and I enjoyed it, but not as much as Halo 1.
So, okay. So, you'll probably be able to feel where I'm coming from here. So, I was playing the PC version, keyboard and mouse, and it felt... It felt slow. It felt kind of awkward and clumsy. I mean, like, I'm used to playing slow first-person shooters, like, a very slow tactical fighter. But it felt like, there's no run mode. There's no I felt like you were moving slower.
Okay.
And I'm like, is there a shift to hit the run key? Am I just doing something wrong? And it wasn't like game performance. It wasn't like the game was chugging. It was just – it felt a little slower to me. And I'm like, okay, maybe it's all in my head. Maybe it's perception. And then they plugged in a gamepad. And I said, okay, you know what? This is going to be sacrilegious, but I'm going to play a PC first-person shooter with a gamepad. Mm-hmm. And as I'm doing it, I'm noticing, because it's keyed to analog movement. So, like, I'm moving the left thumbstick up a little slightly, and he's, walking a few steps. And then I push it up all the way, and he's running.
Right.
There's none of that on the...
There's none of that with the keyboard.
Right. I was told... Seems like a minor thing, but I noticed because like I was getting my ass handed to me when I was playing with keyboard and mouse.
Right.
And then as soon as I had the gamepad in my hand, I'm like whipping grenades in back corners. I'm like I'm owning the map, and I'm just wondering, is it me? Is it all in my head? Because I played Halo 2 on a gamepad, but at the same point, I play first person shooters all the time.
Right. Well, you're saying just what you just said with the analog movement thing is just like clearly this game was designed. For a console from the beginning.
Right.
And now here it is on a PC, which obviously has some different nuances to it.
Right. And that's not saying like the game looks pretty good. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look like, Hellgate or Crysis good, but it looks certainly better than the 360 upgrades. Mm-hmm. The minor texture tweaks there were. I don't know. If you're looking for a game to showcase like what Vista can do, I would have done a little bit more. It's still a fun game, and for those who haven't played Halo 2 yet, maybe they'll get it.
Who out there is interested? This has been my question all along. Is like, who out there is still interested in Halo 2 that hasn't already played it? Who's been sitting there going, "Man, you know what I'd like to play, and I haven't yet? Halo 2, and I don't have an Xbox, and I'm going to get it for PC." No one.
Yeah.
I can't think of anyone.
The only thing that's supposed to be promising about this is that it comes with a level editor. It's supposed to be now. Here's where I got it's kind of a mixed thing. I talked to one person, officially on the record, who is saying how it's you need to know a little bit of coding to get this thing done. It's not like cakewalk. And then I talked to somebody who actually worked on the tool set, and they said that it's actually pretty easy, certainly easier than it was to make the Halo 1 maps.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what the story is, but that's the big selling point. So multiplayer, achievement points, Yahoo. Woohoo! And then there you have it. And then
By the time when Halo 2 comes out, it's going to be almost time for Halo 3 on the console.
I know that's the sad thing. It feels so much.
Why
like
didn't they just make Halo 3 for the PC?
Or why didn't they make Halo Wars for the PC? Make it RTS? But that's an old question.
I mean, it's frustrating.
Yeah. All right. So
we're getting we're getting the old game about the same time as the new game, and it just makes you feel a little inferior.
Yeah, just slightly. All right. So I'm gonna cruise through this because there's. I noticed that when I was walking around the show floor that, yeah, there's a lot of nothing happening in some parts, but there's also a lot of stuff, a lot of interesting things happening in the equivalent of Kenshiya Hall from E3. Mm-hmm. There's like this a second hall that where I found some really interesting technology and some interesting like indie developers that are looking at – well, I'll go into all that in a second. So I'll just – the hardware first. So this is one wacky peripheral from I believe the company's called TN Systems or something. I have to double check that, but – so imagine you wear a peripheral, it's a vest, and you strap it on, and you're playing a first, and they drop an API into first-person shooters, and like it pokes you. So like if you're getting, if you're getting shot by a gun or something, a target-appropriate piston or whatever, punches through the vest and into
that
you.
Sounds terrible.
I know.
You can hit by a rocket launcher.
Well, I know. The thing is,
I don't want to get.
There's different intensity levels depending on distance and weapon. But the thing was, and like I said, okay, I'm like, jack this thing up all the way. I want to see how tough this is going to punch me. And it was just like, it's like your annoying little brother tapping you.
Who asked for this? Who's wanting to feel the bullets?
You know what?
That's one of the reasons.
I know. I'm more of a carrot than a stick kind of guy. So I'm like, where's the positive reinforcement vest? Where's the happy spot? You know, I'm not going to go there, but. I'm just like
you can imagine what this vest would be like.
Yeah, oh, I don't want to know.
So, yeah, that sounds.
Like yeah, that was kind of wacky. And then this was the year that like I felt like I walked onto a set of scanners. There was brain control shit there. It was some stupid stuff.
People's heads exploding and everything.
Yeah, I'm waiting. I was waiting for that. So okay, so there's two companies almost right near each other showing off a similar idea. One was called NeuroSky. Which is kind of like a low budget thing that reads brainwave activities.
Isn't that what causes the machine human war in the year 2073?
I believe it does. But actually, there's another one. Well, actually, so hang tight. So this one from NeuroSky. Yeah, I know. Well, hell. Yeah. But anyway, from Cyberdyne Systems. No, anyway. So what happens is there's a little meter. Like they created a Half-Life 2 mod to show how it works. Right. There's a little meter on the top of the screen, kind of. So it gives you a gauge for how much brainwave activity is going on.
Uh-huh.
And if you're brain dead, sorry, you're not gonna be able to do anything. But if you point the reticle at an object in the game in the map, and you focus, you can push the object, and it works. It's very binary, on or off. There's no like levels of degrees of sophistication.
So did you try this?
I played it and it worked.
So you're pushing things with your mind?
Yeah. So, I mean, but the thing is, it was like you pick like the way they had it set up. It was very basic. I know. You hit like you select like you know. I know it sounds
so
stupid.
Wait.
I'm picturing you wearing something like Doc Brown's big heads of ice and Back to the Future.
Exactly. So like, what? A big metal strainer with like no. Actually, it was just like imagine like the headsets we're wearing to talk right now.
Yeah.
They basically it was like wearing a headset like
okay.
That.
So okay, and, you point. The mouse at whatever
you point the reticle
at a box
right okay. Or
and
a
then
car.
You think like
and you think I was thinking about celery and it moved. I mean, I was just like you don't have to like it's not a very sophisticated thing. I was like
so it sounds like you would have to actually expend effort to not think
exactly.
In order to not move it
exactly.
Now, so what's like the practical application of this device?
I know this one was kind of weird.
Where is this ever going to come in handy?
Well. Their PR pitchman, Johnny Liu, CGW alum.
Really?
Really. So anyway, yeah. Anyway, so the hook is you can do all these cool things. You can move objects in game, but the snare is that you can. How shall I put it? I don't know. I mean, like it's just so arbitrary. And like there was one. It was actually pretty funny. There was a guy who went after me, and apparently he must have been brain dead because he couldn't get anything to move. Anyway, but like I don't know. It just didn't feel like.
So you're saying this contraption that moves things with your brain is stupid?
Well, I wouldn't say it's stupid. I say it's very simplistic. There was another. Okay. There was another thing there. I'm going to their offices to check it out tomorrow. It's a lot more sophisticated. So there's this company called Emotive Systems. And Ed Freeze, one of the guys behind like Wonderkind, worked on like Microsoft for ages and helped with AGA in the beginning. He's working on this now, and So they, so imagine like a game that actually does a little bit more than just on or off. So I was this actually requires hand movement, so I'm going to try to describe this while I'm doing it. But so this guy, it's a more expensive device. You put a, you know, it actually looks like a proper skull cap on or like something. And he was raising, like this guy demoing, he would he was playing a Harry Potter game, you know, like one of those recent ones that EA came out with.
Flipendo!
Yay! So basically, he raises his arms, and an object lifts up in the environment. And then he pushes his hands away like he's like shoving something, and the object throws against a wall.
Okay.
And like that was it. That was all the controls. I mean, like it was stuff that he was doing. I mean, it seems like more sophisticated things you could do with it. And I'm definitely curious to see.
It sounds like these are all tech demo-y things. Right?
Exactly. So tomorrow I'm going to their office and see what the deal is up close and personal. If it's total crap, then I'll call them on it. But it looked pretty. It looked really interesting. Actually, it was people like. The entire all of GDC was gathered around two areas. It was gathered around like this booth and the IGF guys. Now, I've said before in the past, I'm all about indie games, and I saw like all sorts of people just like running through there, like all like Epic guys, Mike Capps and Cliffy B, Warren Spector, all these guys. Like it's like everyone just kind of like wanted to see what the what these really creative students and just indie developers wanted to put together.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? If you go to the I think it's IGF.com. They have like a list of all the winners and links to the downloads and stuff like that. It's totally worth checking out.
And IGF is Independent Games Festival.
Independent Game Festival. It's a part of GDC. It's been around for a couple of years. And it's seriously, like, this is where like the introversion guys got their break.
Mm-hmm.
This is where like all like the cool games that you don't hear about until a year later. This is where they start. So
did you see anything there?
Oh yeah, Everyday Shooter won 3 awards. It's kind of like it's part Every Extend, it's part Robotron, I guess. It's a simple shooter game, but each level feels a little different. And the whole game is basically centered around guitar riffs. So as you're shooting and chaining explosions, you're creating music as you go, basically.
Oh.
So I mean, it's actually pretty cool. It's a little bit of Rez, a little bit of.
Can you download that right now? Or is it out? Or
it isn't done. It isn't fully done yet. But he was demo. He was showing it off there.
Okay. You don't use a guitar controller or anything.
No, there's no guitar. Although, like, and that's another thing. Like, there's like the Guildhall students and like other like RIT students were there showing off stuff. One game actually did use it could use a Guitar Hero controller to play a game online. I mean, a game. The 2D, not a 2D. It's like a side scroller. And you fight enemies by following guitar riffs. It's weird. I know, but
all right.
There's so many like that's the point. Is that there's so many creative games you don't see anywhere else there. So that's I'm gonna cut off the GDC rant right there.
Okay. So but GDC to you was a vest that pokes you, mind control, and some indie games.
That's exactly it.
All right. Good summary. Cool.
Done.
So I guess now we'll read a little reader question.
Okay.
From the readers on the forums. This is Terrorist 13. That's a good name. It's spelled WRIST.
Terror. So his wrist is full of terror.
Yes. With the current fad in game design being emergent gameplay, being thrown around for games that have none, like online shooters such as the next Unreal game, or simplistic console games like Crackdown. Parentheses. Yeah, being able to figure out how to jump from one building to the next in ways the developers didn't imagine might be emergent on a first grid level. Why isn't anyone talking about EVE Online?
Well,
And that it is an intensive MMORPG that not only gives elves swords and fireballs the finger, but it also is essentially player-driven. For example, two fleets were gearing up to war. I don't know if I want to read this whole thing.
What, do you write an essay?
Yeah, there's a little essay about this example.
People
blowing each other up in a way that you never would have imagined.
EVE Online is the most superior online game ever played.
And then, is this not rad? Why aren't people looking at this game more and taking note of what it's accomplished and trying to incorporate it into their own games or evolve the concept further? Clearly it can be done. Are we going to be stuck with the cookie-cutter WoW experience where one raid of the same dungeon is exactly the same as the other one? And that no matter who you are, tier 5 rating gear is going to look exactly the same from one person to the next. The question is...
Hey, I talk about EVE Online every...
Yeah, well, number one...
Yeah, Ryan is definitely not guilty of...
Ryan always talks EVE Online. And the question of, like, what is emergent gameplay is kind of what came out of that for me anyway.
Okay, I was going to...
Well, the question, like, are we going to be stuck with the cookie-cutter WoW experience? Like, the reality that all the... publishing money hats see is that WoW has 8 million subscribers. So they want to be like WoW. Eve has 160,000 subscribers. They don't really look at that.
Well, it's not even that. Like right now, there are what, 60? There's something like 67 MMO games in development as we speak. And how many of them are really going to be a success?
Like one?
Right.
Maybe.
And that one's called WoW.
Right. So the thing for me is, like, I am a huge WoW fan. As anyone who listens to this in Legendary Thread knows.
Says the man wearing a Questgiver cap as we're speaking.
I always wear my Questgiver cap.
By the way, has anyone ever stopped you on the street and, like, asked for a quest?
Yes. Several times.
What do you say to them?
I usually smile and nod. Sometimes I just ignore them. It depends. I immediately make a value judgment based on their
character.
You should
tell them to bring you back 10 apples. And
you should totally have a prepared quest, man. You should be like a low-level noob quest. Hi, I need 5 beers.
It depends on my mood. Like, if I'm just, like, sitting there on the bus reading and, like, the guy sitting next to me says something, I'm like, oh, I got to sit with this guy for another 20 minutes. But if it's, like, someone walking by, then it's cool. Mm-hmm. That happened the other day. There was we were in Target, and there was a family of 6, like 4 children, mom and dad. And dad says, hey, what do I get if I turn in my quest? And then I'm like, ha, 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 and then I walk away. See, that was fine. I'm just like, oh, look, there's a dad who plays WoW.
You should have like a
camaraderie.
You should have a couple pennies in your pocket.
And I've said this before, it took me a little while to, like, convince myself that wearing this hat was okay in public. Because I'm like, well, okay, people who, like, are really into the Giants always wear their hat. I'm really into WoW. I'm going to wear this, and it's going to be okay, goddammit. I'm helping the cause. I'm making this a little more acceptable in the mainstream.
Yeah, because the cause really needs a lot of help.
it needs all
Blizzard
the help
needs
get.
More help.
All right,
Blizzard
so back,
needs money.
So back to the question. It was the sorry, I took it off track. You're saying
right.
As a WoW player.
So as a WoW player, this game to me, like, I played EverQuest. I played Ultima Online.
The best game ever made,
Yeah,
awesome.
Ryan calls it the best game ever made. And to me, those were too open-ended. I would sit there and I'd be like, I can do anything
You think EverQuest was too open-ended?
Yeah.
The only thing there that you had to do, that was like when grind was the only thing to do to level up.
I didn't even know what to grind necessarily. I would stand there and go, okay, this whole world is in front of me. And now what?
That's pretty much the experience I had with Star Wars Galaxies when it first came out.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I had all this awesome. I spent all this time creating Chewbacca, the kosher Wookiee, and I was more enraptured with the backstory with the game. But by the time I landed on the planet, I'm like, okay, there's a lot of people, and where the hell do I go? What do I do? And after about a day, I was done with it.
Yeah,
there's a fine line, but this is actually an ongoing problem. It's like finding that fine line between the emergent gameplay, where it just kind of leaves you the open world to kind of toy with. And then you just kind of have a loose story thread to kind of not hold your hand, but at least kind of push you in a direction.
Right. So, I mean, the problem with emergent gameplay is, like, sometimes just nothing comes of it. Like, okay, so I didn't realize, the developer didn't intend me to be able to push this crate onto this guy and kill him, but so? Like, he didn't intend for it, so he didn't plan the result. So it's just like, it's the sandbox mentality that I'm not all about the sandbox is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ryan's been playing Ultima Online.
Well, I've been playing Ultima Online on Hybrid, which is a very popular free UO server. It's got about 107,000 players.
Aren't you worried talking about it that EA might shut the shard down?
If they were going to do that, they would have done it already.
Mark my words, next week.
Yeah, whatever.
You could thank Ryan Scott for your server getting shut down.
It's been around for about 4 years, I want to say. And we have about 107,000 players. That's quite a lot. For
how many?
I cannot for the life of me remember where I read this.
Uh-huh.
Maybe I'm making it up. I don't know, but a little over 100,000 players.
So basically,
I know they average about 1,000 logins.
It's crazy.
24/7.
Wow.
And you know that's kind of crazy. I mean, like, there's a game another game that wasn't the same cookie cutter, Elf Slayer thing, but Auto Assault. I mean, how many people did that at its maximum? How many people were in that? Did it ever top 100,000?
Oh, hell no. No way.
I mean, that was a post-apocalyptic wasteland. That was just terminal. That game was fun and no one played it.
Well, they had to condense it down to one server like less than a month after launch.
Exactly.
Right?
So. Right. Well, the reason you're playing on this shard is because it's kind of an older version of the game. When it was more emergent, I guess.
Well, back in about, I think it was 2000, they released this expansion called Renaissance. And the big thing that Renaissance did was it introduced a mirrored version of the world where attacking players was not allowed.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, when that happened, that kind of like killed a lot of the fun of the game. A lot of the fun in UO, for me, I know you guys probably will argue this, but a lot of the fun for me was the risk. You know, like, you didn't know if the dude you just passed on the street was going to try to kill you or not.
Mm-hmm.
And when they introduced this mirror server, it, like, you really had no reason to go back to the original PvP.
PvP everywhere world.
Right. I mean, there was never any reason to go there if you weren't into that. And so that's kind of just like sent the game on this downward spiral. And
so,
this server doesn't have that part of the game.
But they
still continue to kind of like pick and choose the best parts of the things that EA introduces into new expansions.
So with this mirrored world, what was it called?
Trammel.
That pretty much removed, because are you like the kind of PvP player who likes to kill people who are just wandering around? Are you
no.
a ganker?
No.
Okay.
Bullshit.
No, I've never been that way, no.
All right.
I'm more like the kind of person who likes to go and kill the people who do that.
Oh.
You know?
So you're like the Robin Hood or whatever.
You're the Avenger.
Well, sort of.
You're vigilante. But there's no one to... So the food chain of that was removed when they made the mirror
world. Basically, yeah, it's like, you know, all wolves and no sheep.
Uh-huh.
So that's no fun. No fun being a wolf when everybody else is a wolf. You know?
Right. I would have moved to Tamriel. What's it called? Tamriel?
Trammel.
Trammel? I would have moved to Trammel.
Yeah.
That was always...
Get away from me.
Yeah, pretty much. My entire UO experience was mining gloves and then having someone kill my donkey and take all my gloves.
Where, like, I can clearly remember the first time I was ever player killed in UO, and my response was just like, wow, that was awesome. I have to learn how to do that.
Yeah, my response was,
school's out.
I hate school's out, yep.
3 o'clock, time to shut off.
Yep.
Right. But I've actually kind of been on an MMO odyssey lately. I spent a couple of days playing City of Heroes until I remembered once again why I stopped playing that game.
And why's that?
It just gets boring after a while.
I've never really got past level 5.
It's like, you know, hey, go into this building to go do, you know, kill all these guys and accomplish the mission. You go into this building and it's like, wow, I've been in this building 17 times already.
Uh-huh.
It's the same building. And then in City of Heroes, it's kind of like, it's the only MMO I've ever seen where leveling up actually makes you worse.
Huh, really?
Because,
I never got...
Like, you have all these superpowers.
Yes, you do.
And each superpower has all these enhancement slots where you can add, like, a damage enhancer or, you know, an accuracy enhancer to an attack,
right,
for instance. But the enhancers, like, let's say, you know, you're level 15 and you add, like, a level 15 damage enhancer to your sword attack.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. When you level up 16, 17, that level 15 enhancer degrades as the gap between your level and the enhancements level widens, and it eventually reaches the point where it's not doing anything for you.
Yeah,
so you're constantly in this race to like keep all your enhancements up to date, but it's too goddamn expensive to buy new ones, so you're always like playing with all these outdated enhancements.
Well, only if you play like a retard. There's a you go out in the game world and like,
they don't drop very nearly as often
as
you when you get up to like level 18, 19, 20. They don't drop nearly as often as you need when you've got like
multiple slots if you play it. I mean, like I played up to about level 30 or 40, and I didn't have a problem with it. I mean, like, well, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. The degrading system's a little busted, and the prices for the upgrades at the stores are too high.
Well, from what
high,
I understand, once you hit about level 30, you start earning more money than you can possibly spend. But it's like getting up to that point is like, oh, great. All my attacks are now useless.
I didn't run into the wall that you did because I actually
such problems with
maybe I was lucky. Maybe my luck was up and like I just kept getting drops of the upgrades I needed. I didn't have that problem. I had other inherent problems with how the game is designed. Like with the constant like issue updates and like adding new things, it fixed it. And I just didn't like how you pick a. There was no way to kind of undo a skill choice for a while.
You can, but it's like you had to jump through a bunch of hoops to do it.
Right.
So that's I haven't gotten to that point yet.
And also the costumes are a whole other thing. And
I mean, costumes are pretty cool.
Well, the costumes are pretty cool, but like the guy you create at level one, that's what he's going to look like. And you add a couple little things along the way, and then you buy another costume. I mean, this has all changed since my initial impressions of playing
right.
the game ages ago.
I know, right. There's
a lot of my initial beefs have been polished over.
Like you have there's the character customization. No one's really totally nailed it because you got like City of Heroes where you can really customize something into something really cool, and that's great. But you can't change it the whole game. Well, you can maybe I don't know maybe
no,
you can.
No, they let you do it
extra
now.
Oh, they do.
Oh yeah. Well, they fixed that a while ago. Okay. They fixed that a while ago.
How many times can you do that?
Well, you can.
I think you have like five slots.
You can have five completely different costumes, and there's like a tailor NPC that you can go to and change.
Oh, okay. See, I haven't played it since it came out, so.
Right. So that's exactly it. It's like
well, then that sounds better.
Yeah.
But like then you have a game like WoW where okay, so you have a bunch of different slots from the beginning, but everyone winds up almost looking the same because
everyone wants the legendary weapon.
Right. Because there is pretty clear, distinct like gear that is the best. If not, like, maybe
elite.
Two different pieces of gear, that would be good. So, I don't know which is the best solution there. I really don't. Die is the best solution. You can die everything.
That's a great solution. I'm all about that solution.
All right. So I don't know if we answered that question, but I don't really care.
That's right. Screw
you.
We
gotta stop.
Yeah, what's the point?
Screw you, terrorist.
What's the what?
So, you're right. Eve's awesome, and more people should be talking about it, and... All those guys who just want to make WoW clones are dumb because they're all going to fail. So,
sadly, they're not all going to fail, but like, there's definitely something to the fact that
99% of them are.
99% of them are, and like anyone who tries something, it sucks as much as it does to say this, but anyone who's been trying to do something that's different or beyond WoW still doesn't make that much money, except for maybe Guild Wars because they don't charge any monthly fees. So right. maybe that's the trick, is to make a game that doesn't require monthly fees to actually get any traction, because there's only so much money anyone has to spend on games per month, and there's only so much time anyone has to dedicate to games per month. So you have to basically make a game that's better than WoW, but not WoW.
Right.
So good luck. Good luck on that.
Well, Guild Wars doesn't have, like, many content patches box, though, do they?
No.
No, yeah. They don't, but again, that kind of falls outside the equation because it doesn't charge monthly fees.
Right, that's why they... make you buy another game to get the new content. So that's a different model.
Right.
But I don't know. Enough of that. All right. Well, I guess we should wrap up, huh?
No.
Any final thoughts, Ryan?
No. All right. Actually, nothing's coming to mind.
No, it's actually great. I've actually heard Ryan talk this episode.
Play EVE Online.
There you go.
Play Ultima Online, except on hybrid. And WoW is pretty cool sometimes, too.
You still think so?
I think so.
Okay.
Cool. Well, it's different.
Let me see. Parting thoughts. Oh, play Peggle. You must play. Everyone, go to
I've been hearing that.
Go to PopCap and PopCapGames.com, I think it is, and download this new game. It's kind of like partially like there's old pachinko games.
Right, where you drop a ball.
You drop a ball down and it just bangs around. It's a little bit of that. It's a little bit of like Breakout, I guess, or Bubble Bobble, or it's kind of, I can't even really.
It's weird how when you describe a casual game, it sounds terrible. But I believe you that it's really awesome.
Thanks.
My
description's horrible, I know, but...
No, any casual game, you're just like, oh, yeah, you match some blocks, and you're like, oh, great.
All you have to really say is, new PopCap game out.
Yeah,
and it's like, we know it's good.
Market, it's closed.
Yeah. Okay.
Case closed.
Cool. And we are out.
Yeah, I can't wait to start playing Stalker. Yeah.
This has been a presentation of the 1UP Radio Network. For more shows, visit podcast.1up.com.